Blog Talk Radio.
Ooh. Yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. When we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen.
So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
We getting funky like a monkey. We always do. And I love it here. Tuesday nights is awesome because Pancakes and Power Slams graces the Tuesday night airwaves. And ladies and gentlemen, it's going to be awesome as always. We got a lot to talk about. And as my boy Derek says, 90 minutes is never enough. So we're going to get right into it. Before we get into payback, we're, of course, going to have some trivia questions. And I want to let you know, and I want to introduce you to the baddest co-host on the planet. Derek, how are you tonight, sir?
Hi, everybody. I'm doing great. Hey, I'm here with Chris Featherstone. Well, I'm not with him. As far as I'm in the studio, Pancake Power Slam Studio, Chris is abroad doing whatever he does to bring the best wrestling to Pancakes and Power Slam. 90 minutes is never enough. I've said it a million times. He'll say it as well. Our interns will say it because they're tired of working for nothing. But anyway, hey, ladies and gentlemen, this is the nonstop place to be. Tuesday night, 11 o'clock Eastern Time, West Coast, 9 o'clock. Or no, even 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock, yes.
They know what it means. But anyway, they're here with us too. We love you guys. If you live in Bangkok or Thailand, I don't know what time, but I know you're listening. Thank you so much. This is the greatest night for wrestling, other than Monday Night Raw. And
absolutely.
This is Pancakes Power Slams.
Yes, sir. And just a minor, you know, geographical technicality, you know, Bangkok is in Thailand, so, you know, you made both of them a little bit different, but it's okay. We'll let you pass on this one here. You know, you probably need just refreshing.
There's,
you know, you've been in high school
Colorado
for a while.
In Colorado, yeah. There's a little city called Thailand. So that's what I was talking about.
Oh, you were talking about the one in the States. Oh, okay. Okay. How in the world can I miss that?
Well, I don't know. You know, you kind of get silly sometimes.
But anyway, you're absolutely right.
If you're on Mars, you're listening to Pancakes and Power Slams.
Absolutely. And, you know, we're 3 years strong, 3 years plus strong. We got some interviews coming up here in the coming weeks. And I'm just excited about just all the interviews that we have coming and all the interviews that we had, especially last week, man. Jesse Sorensen, of course, just swarming the internet scene at the internet, and as he calls the dirt sheets, and you know, as the journalist, as myself calls it, you know, wrestling sites. Either way, it's one of the same, and I'm really happy that the interview last week with Jesse Sorensen got an opportunity to spread pretty much. I mean, you know, like wildfire. Got I don't know how many reads it has now. I think like the first day or two, it's it got over 10,000 reads, Bleacher Report. So I'm sure it's much higher than that now. I haven't even checked since last week. So yeah, it's good stuff, man. Report on major wrestling sites, and I really want this guy to make it. I want him to make it in the NXT, and like I said before, it wasn't, I mean, I didn't say that just to say it. I really think that Jesse Sorensen has a lot of potential, and I wasn't happy the way that, you know, he left or he was released from TNA, and it's sad, and, you know, I'm glad that he had an opportunity to rebound, and now he's with the very awesome upstarting promotion, Paragon Pro Wrestling. And, you know, kudos to Jesse Sorensen and all of his endeavors. And so we got some interviews coming up in the coming weeks. And today we're going to talk about Payback. We're going to talk about Raw, which I thought was a pretty good episode, actually. And it was a pretty complete episode that I really liked, and we'll talk about that. And then, of course, we'll talk about the Elimination Chamber. You know, is all of the Elimination Chamber, are the picks right? You know, is it something that they got wrong? Is it something they got right? We'll talk about that. And, of course, we'll relive the first 6 years of the Elimination Chamber. We haven't done throwback reliving Flavor of the Week topics in a while, but today we'll relive 2002 to 2008 of the Elimination Chambers. And speaking of that, this is just a random trivia question to start off. Who was the very first Elimination Chamber winner? I might have asked this before, but it's been a while. So who was the very, very first Elimination Chamber winner? And ladies and gentlemen, I also like to announce the WeAreWrestling.net has now evolved into WAWNation.com. The couple of years, the year and a half that this site has been in effect, it's growing astronomically. I'm just really, really impressed by just the growth that the site has, and I'm so glad that I was able to, and still am, you know, able to contribute with the growth, and I'm really happy to be affiliated with WAWNation.com, formerly WeAreWrestling.net, and you know, it's expanding to not only wrestling, because we are wrestling, absolutely, but just also giving you some MMA up to date news as well. So be sure to commentate on that, and be sure to check that out. Speaking of MMA, Chael Sonnen is going to commentate Global Force Wrestling, and just a couple of topics we're going to hit before we get to the Payback talk. Man, Derek, how about Scott Hall relapsing and just getting crazy drunk at an indie show? And because of that, him signing with GFW, just it's done now. He was a roster member. I don't know how it was going to be used. I would imagine in some type of authority role, but or some type of backstage agent or some type of role in that sense. But he's no longer on the roster, and And it's sad because he decided to leave Jake Roberts' DDP's accountability crib, and just really sad that he decided to make that decision again, and it cost him so much, you know, just like the other time, just like the years that he was addicted, and it cost him so much again. He was doing so well, and became a WWE Hall of Famer. And, you know, signed with Global Force Wrestling. And because of another, you know, relapse and just the inability to really slay that demon, he's losing things once again. And I hope that the stress and depression that caused him, that comes with losing his opportunity to be in GFW, I hope that that doesn't cause him to go even further down like he could potentially do. So, I mean, I really wish the best for Scott Hall.
Well, yeah, we all wish the best for him, but he's got to wish that for himself. I mean, doggone it. We all remember the E60 thing on ESPN they had, you know, a couple years back.
Yeah.
And all over again. And we all want to get behind Scott Hall, the bad guy, Razor Ramon. I don't know. What else can you say? This is going to hurt his chances for almost anything else in wrestling. I mean, is the WWE going to want him to make guest spots like he did with Hogan and WrestleMania? Are we going to bring this guy on the biggest stage of wrestling and just have him get wasted and make a fool of himself and our brand? No. And it's, you know, I'm not the judge, jury, and executioner, but, you know, it's something's got to give. And if DDP can't do it, who can? But it's a shame. It's sad. But I'm always a Scott Hall fan. I'm always going to be a Scott Hall. But it's more so than a
memory. I agree. And you're right. You know, we're not that role. You know, we're just not. But, you know, and you know, only thing I can do as a strong man of God, you know, I can pray for him, and that's what I'm going to do. I wish him the best, and I really, really hope, man, that I don't know if it was just people he was around. I don't know if it was just spur of the moment, but you know, I know, you know, I have a family. I've been surrounded in my life with people who have had drug and alcohol addictions, and so I'm very, very familiar with just the ability that it has to lord over your life. And I really wish the best for this guy, you know, and I really hope that he doesn't make the. Yeah, I remember, you know, a few years back when I was reporting things about him and just the house shows that he was at and just how he was slurring and being escorted by, you know, security and just made such an amazing transformation with his hip replacement surgery, raising, I believe it was $80,000from our money, you know, to get to hip surgery and the ability to rebound away from that stuff was really awesome. So I just pray that it's just a minor dip, and he'll come back, you know, strong and swinging. And then finally, and of course we report these things throughout the week on We Are Wrestling on the Crave Wrestling Facebook page, and also WAWNation.com. I think we're going to bring that. We used to do this a couple of years ago, probably 2.5, you know, closer to 3 years ago. We would have this week's news, and like Derek says, 90 minutes is never enough. We have so much to cover, but I think I'm going to, you know, for the sake of our listeners who are very loyal and quite a few, and I'm so happy. Just in case you missed a couple of things, a couple of reports throughout the week, I'll do that. And another one, just one more I want to just make note of is the Stone Cold podcast is coming back to the WWE Network, and there've been talks throughout the weeks that Stone Cold and Vince McMahon had kind of a falling out, and some disagreements with some things, and that's one of the reasons why Jericho came with his podcast, which, you know, everybody knows I'm a Jericho mark, but his podcast couldn't hold, you know, Austin's jockstrap, you know, on the WWE Network. Austin's podcast with Vince and Triple H was awesome. Both of them were. And, you know, Jericho's with Cena and Stephanie was a lot more kayfabe than Austin. You know, Austin doesn't care. You know, Austin's like, I'm going to tell you how, I'm going to tell you like it is. I'm going to shoot you straight, and I'm going to ask you the hard-hitting questions. Jericho's podcast was more of a story type thing. You know, let's just recap a bunch of, you know, stories, which has its place, but not, you know, not for our audience that already watched the over 3 hours of Raw, and we gotta, you know, we're going to watch another hour. You got to keep us up. And Jericho's came after his Stephanie came after SmackDown, so that's still 2 hours, and you have to keep us up for another hour. It needs to be pretty compelling. So I'm happy that Austin's coming back, and it's going to be Heyman on June the 1st. So that's going to be awesome. And then he's also, there's also been breaking news that Sting, Hulk Hogan, The Undertaker are three future guests on the podcast. So it's going to be, I'm very excited for that.
That's going to be excellent. And it's Y2J's, again, I'm a Jericho-holic. I love Chris Jericho, but his podcast sucks. And this wasn't that very exciting. Stone Cold, like you said, he just doesn't care. And ask anything. I love Paul Heyman's going to be on there. There's going to be a lot of inside ECW talk, I think, on Brock Lesnar talk. CM Punk will probably be brought up a few times. And it's going to be absolutely exciting. What you going to ask Hulk Hogan? He's always been compared to Hulk Hogan. As far as, you know, with popularity, he's the most popular wrestler in WWE history. And Hulk Cold knows how to bring aggression out of people and frustration and, you know, just very good questions. Where Jericho is more relaxed. And, hey, there's your dad earlier. What do you think of him? Was he a nice guy?
Right. Exactly.
Stone Cold's just like, yeah, Vince is over there. Give him the middle finger, drink a beer, and proceed to ask questions. So I'm very happy about that. I'm going to watch it for sure, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah. Good stuff there. All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, Payback, and of course, www.awnation.com live stream as we are all the time, every week. Great comments already toward the Scott Hall. It says that drinking, drugs, and gambling, I've been addicted to them all. You have to want to stop. Hats off to you. That's awesome. Yeah, and that's awesome advice. Just real short and simple advice that I totally agree with. So, great stuff there. All right, ladies and gentlemen, Payback. Starts off with R-Truth defeating Stardust. The pre-show, and this was totally unannounced. So I really didn't understand the point of that. But you know, they've been having some feud. They've been feuding the past few weeks. So, you know, it makes sense. There was one, you know, I think R-Truth won one time, and then Stardust won another time with the whole pulling out the fake spiders thing, and so R-Truth wins this time. I don't know, and I was, you know, talking to some colleagues today, and I believe I was talking to, Ryan and I were wrestling chatting all day today, and it's funny because I was talking about the participants, and there's something about R-Truth that I'm just loyal to. I'm a loyal R-Truth fan. I don't probably because I remember when he was K-Quick. We getting rowdy, about to move some things. I mean, that was awful. That was absolutely awful when he was teaming up with Road Dogg. And just the evolution of his character just became, he finally got some type of identity that worked. And, you know, he became Ron the Truth Killings. He was the first black NWA World Heavyweight Champion. I mean, the as long as the NWA World Championship has been in existence, you know, that is a monumental achievement to have, you know, to be the first black ever NWA World Heavyweight Champion. And that's a title that's been around longer than any title that we can think of. So, yeah, I mean, I was a fan of Killings when he was in TNA. And, you know, kudos to TNA because TNA really did a fantastic job with just kind of evolving Ron Killings. And, you know, 1948 was the first NWA World Champion, Orville Brown, followed by someone who we know very well, Lou Thesz, Thesz Press. For all of that time, 1948, I believe it was like 02 or 03 that Killings won the first. Yeah, 02. So you're talking, what, quick math there, 64 years or 54 years, you know, that someone that it took before Ron Killings to, you know, to win, an African-American to win the NWA World Championship. So that's awesome. You know, they gave it to Brazil, you know, back in 73, but they didn't, you know, it was one of those things because it is an asterisk behind it. They didn't. You know, he had the title for, what, about 2.5 months. But it was like something that went on. I'm trying to remember something because, like, Brazil was handed it. He was declared the champion. But it was like Killer Kowalski. But the NWA recognizes Buddy Rogers, Nature Buddy Rogers reign all the way to Lou Thesz. And so, you know, he wasn't a recognized champion. So, you know, it wasn't until, you know, 2002 that an African-American was the first recognized NWA World Heavyweight Champion. So kudos to Ron Killings, R-Truth, to that. So I don't know. I guess that's where my loyalty lies, you know, in Ron Killings. He's a good hand. I tweeted today, I believe that Ron Killings is like the new version of Tito Santana. I think he's like the 90s Tito Santana. I was very happy to see. I think he is a good mid-card hand and helpful to the mid-card division. So, you know, it was a good way to start off Payback. There's nothing really going on, you know, between either one of them other than a few matches. And so I was okay with the match. It was impromptu, but at the same time, you know, it worked for me.
It worked. It was great. And what was really bad was the second match with the Ascension and Sandow and Axel and the Night Powers. That was an absolute abomination. There's no future for Sandow. There's no future for Axel. The Ascension, they shouldn't have a future. I can't say anything to really express how bad I felt about it. I mean, that's too bad. I mean, Sandow, he's done.
Oh, man. I tell you, oh, man. And you're absolutely right about that, because the bad thing about that is that they had an opportunity to really do something with Sandow. He got so much. I mean, he was one of the most over people in the entire WWE during his time as Mizdow, you know, with Damian Mizdow. And it was just absolutely ridiculous that they decide to just take away all of that steam from Sandow and all of the build and just throw him into another macho, into another, you know, parody gimmick. Absolutely ridiculous. And I was with a buddy of mine, a good buddy of mine. We were watching it at my place, and I looked at them and I said, "This right here is Monday Night Wars relived." Because if you backtrack, you know, 15 years, you remember these vignettes where you had the Nacho Man and the Huckster, and those two looked just like them. So it was like, it not only was horrible for Sandow and Axel, but it really reminded me of those Monday Night War vignettes that they would have with Billionaire Ted. And that's such a disgrace to both of their characters. Now, Axelmania, the whole Royal Rumble thing got some steam behind it. But, I mean, other than that, both of their characters are just absolutely garbage. Sheamus defeating Dolph Ziggler, you know, it made sense that Sheamus and HBK, good job. That is the answer to the first trivia question. But yeah, Sheamus beating Dolph Ziggler made sense. And I believe that they're trying to, you know, I really think the writing's on the wall that they're going to give Sheamus Intercontinental strap. I'm not a big fan of it. I don't think Sheamus is a very, very solid talent, but I really think that they need to elevate the Intercontinental Championship like they're doing with the U.S. title. And I keep saying Randy Orton should be the guy that should be Intercontinental Champion right now. He has the only, other than John Cena, he has the only ability to really elevate the Intercontinental Championship to be the mid-card title that it should be. And I think him being champion is the perfect way. And we'll get into this later as far as Intercontinental Championship people in the chamber, but it's a perfect way to really put someone over and to make the next Intercontinental Champion more credible. Just imagine if Orton was champion, you can have Orton Ambrose at SummerSlam, you can have Orton Neville at SummerSlam. There's so many things that you could do with Orton being champion. But, you know, Sheamus may be the guy. He's just going to, you know, whoever beats Sheamus for the Intercontinental Championship, that's not really going over too much, because Sheamus isn't a huge name. You know, he's just not, and he's not going to really elevate the championship. You know, he's a decent hand to have it on, but he's not really going to elevate the championship like they really should do. So his match, you know, his win against Ziggler, it made sense. It's getting him some heel steam, but it was a solid match.
It was a solid match, and it's, you know, you're right. You put the strap on Sheamus, it's not going to do anything. I mean, he's been there, what, 4 or 5 years now, and it's taken that long for him to come this far and just be a solid performer. They've got no plans, long-term plans for Sheamus. To put the belt on him is just absolutely going to do nothing. I mean, it'd be great to put the belt on RKO. That would be absolutely awesome. However, I mean, he's been champion so many times. I don't know if they're going to do that again like they did with Cena, make him U.S. title. Even though he's brought the U.S. title a lot, are they going to do that with Randy Orton? I don't see it. I mean, that'd be a great analogy. Dolph, I thought, was a great international champion. Again, beating him doesn't really elevate the next guy. So if there's such a stalemate with it, and you know, there's a solution. I like what you got to say about Randy Orton. I don't know if I could see him going along with that or them going, period. They probably want to keep him in the heavyweight scene. But they've just got so many people that are just kind of heavyweight, too good for the Intercontinental Championship, but not really. But what do they do at this point? I mean, it's actually interesting, this point in wrestling.
Yeah. Yep. Next trivia question. Who has held the NWA World Heavyweight Championship for the longest combined days? Who has held the NWA World Heavyweight Championship for the longest combined days? Next, we have New Day versus Kid and Cesaro. New Day with the victory in 2 out of 3 falls. I tell you what, this is probably the best feud going on right now. I'm a huge fan of New Day versus Kid and Cesaro. Now, this feud, you can tell a feud works when it elevates both competitors or all competitors. This feud, the past few months, has really elevated both Kid and Cesaro and the New Day. Now, when Kid and Cesaro won the tag team titles from a mark, you know, perspective, from a smart perspective, from a diehard wrestling perspective, you know, many people were happy that that happened, you know, with Kid and Cesaro, and they were heels. It seemed a bit abrupt, but both of them earned, you know, a tag team title run because of the hard work that they've put in. However, they still really didn't have much identity. They didn't, you know, they were awesome. They were awesome wrestlers individually, but they didn't really have the cohesion that they should have had as a championship team. But now, I mean, they're very gelled, and they're awesome. You know, I suppose that they're a babyface team now, since the New Day is, you know, full-fledged heel now, undoubtedly, which is awesome, very organic. And similar to the New Day, you know, Kid and Cesaro is the two athletically talented people that can go with the Kofi Kingston or the brute, you know, strength, but still agility of Xavier or a Big E, and just the athletic, you know, ability of Xavier Woods, from a ring psychology standpoint. I really, really like this feud. I think it's an amazing feud, and it really did a fantastic job of elevating both of them. And I really think that, you know, if there was feud of the year, you know, as far as Slammy is concerned, this is it. This is the feud of the year as far as really helping the both of them. And I liked how they really embarked the Freebird rule and had Xavier Woods get the fall, you know, get the pin at the last, you know, fall. I think that was a very smart, just a little things that really help with the overall psychology of a match. And that's one of them. Very, very good. Major kudos to all of these matches. And I'm very happy that the New Day retained, because they are one of the hottest commodities in the WWE right now, hands down.
Yeah, they've been doing great, hands down. And I love the old switcheroo. I mean, that was an absolute mind-blowing thing to do. Not mind-blowing. I mean, they've done it in the past. Not so much New Day, but other tag teams. And you had Demolition, had 3 members, and he had the Wild. Then he had the Freebirds, and of course Bad Street. And so it's just, it was great. I liked it. I liked New Day. They've really grown on me, especially since their heel turn. I've seen a lot of people, you know, really turn into being New Day fans because of the heel turn. Personally,
right.
I mean, that's absolutely awesome. Any of the Cesaro and Tyson Kidd, I mean, they're an awesome team for those two to go against. Happy for them at the moment, and you can't really have a bad match with these guys, and that's obviously just going to keep it going and create more excitement to this feud, and it shouldn't get stale, and New Day are just going to keep going up, man. I'm excited for it, and wrestling fans should be too.
Absolutely, absolutely. Got an awesome awesome comments here on the live chat, the Real Wrestling live chat. Completely agree. In terms of the tag teams, this feud made me invest in tag team wrestling again on the WWE main roster. New Day are on fire right now, as you've said. Very true. And I think probably my favorite comment of the night so far is Xavier Woods is the Buddy Roberts of New Day. I love that comment. That is absolutely true. Absolutely true. And, you know, what's so amazing about that comment to me is because just the kind of the personality traits that you can see with Xavier Woods and Buddy Roberts. I remember, you know, when Buddy Roberts was in World Class, he was called the Toast of the Coast. Mark Lawrence, the commentator, the ring announcer, Mark Lawrence, would say, "The Toast of the Coast, Buddy Roberts." And what was so interesting was when he was feuding with the Von Erichs, is when he had the hair versus hair match, and he had to get his hair shaved, and he wore the wig with the wrestling, you know, headgear, and just awesome. Just his heelish antics were awesome. Very, very good parallel there. Awesome comparison. Xavier Woods and Buddy Roberts, I totally agree.
Great comparison. Like I was saying, you know, you got three in a tag team that makes a very interesting twist. And, of course, you got the Von Erichs. There's like five of those guys. I think there's only one now, but that's a different story. But I'd like to see... I mean, it's just creativity at its best, and it's to really throw the crowd and really just, you know, make a win into something that they cheated, but, you know, it makes sense. It makes sense. It's what's best for business. So I'm happy with it. And again, it was a great opening to Payback. And
yep.
Anyway, what's next for Payback? Honestly, Payback was a decent pay-per-view. I think the main event was probably one of the best main events I've seen in a long time.
Really? Interesting.
Really?
I think it was a heavy spot fest. I did like a few spots in there. We'll get to that. We may have differing opinions. I mean, I didn't think it was horrible, but we'll get to that. Next trivia question is, who was the last world champion in the Universal Wrestling Federation? Who was the last world champion in the UWF? Bray Wyatt defeating Ryback. I did not like this idea because, you know, I understand that you want to protect Bray Wyatt still. I understand that. But at this point, Ryback has more steam than Bray Wyatt has. And Ryback is the one that needs to get the wins. And, you know, he's getting the Feed Me More. His mic work is, oh my goodness, leaps and bounds. It's still not awesome, but his mic work has improved leaps and bounds. I remember when he was shooting against CM Punk. Oh man, it was cringeworthy. It was cringeworthy to hear him on the mic. And when he was feuding with John Cena, same thing with him when he was feuding with Cena, when he turned heel, cringeworthy mic work. But definitely has evolved so much. You know, I don't know if it's I'm almost done with JTG's book and. promo classes taught by Vince McMahon himself. I don't know if they still have it. By the way, I have to give a plug. We'll talk about that next week, JTG's book, but I got to give a plug to that book. I don't use profanity, but it's, you know, D, the curse word D, why did I write this book? And, you know, go get it. It's an awesome juicy, interesting book of storytelling, easy read. It's a very informal style read, so you'll get into it and you'll laugh out loud. And just the stories that he's told is awesome. I'm probably have about 15 or so pages left, but yeah, it's a really, really fun book. And Vince McMahon, he talks about a lot of people, actually. But, you know, he did say that Vince McMahon, you know, he teaches promo classes, and he went to a promo class before. And so, you know, I don't know if he still does that, if Vince still does that, but Ryback has went to somebody's class because he's definitely improved. Ryback, he's the one that's getting the steam. You know, why are you going to have him lose? And we'll even talk about Raw as far as even more. But I don't think that Ryback should have lost that match. If you would have just had some type of screwy finish, I think that would have been better than Ryback taking the pin. Because, and I mean, as you saw, Ryback is in the chamber and Bray Wyatt is just kind of sitting out. We didn't see Randy Orton on Raw. And, you know, Bray Wyatt's not in the Intercontinental title match. And there's been rumors of a possible Orton versus Bray feud. I would be okay with that. But at the same time, if you have to think about this, like, you know, is Bray Wyatt's character so damaged that he really, I mean, this is really all we're going to see with him? You know, he has a good character. He has awesome mic work. But is this really it? You know, is there a ceiling right now in his character as a heel? I mean, okay, so yeah, so what? He beats Randy Orton. Randy Orton, you know, was on the losing end of a Seth Rollins feud. And if he comes right back and becomes on the losing end of a Bray Wyatt feud, what does that really do to Bray Wyatt? And so I don't think that Ryback should have took a clean pin here. I'm not a big fan of that, only because you're pushing Ryback, and if Bray Wyatt loses, you still have Rowan and Harper, who is not, you know, as we saw in Raw, is not in the tag team Elimination Chamber, so you can tease the reformation of the Wyatt family to try to completely devour Ryback. If Ryback would have beat Bray Wyatt, we would have saw some teasing of the Wyatt family, you know, renewing, and then we could have done it that way. But no, a clean win, it really didn't mean much.
It didn't mean anything for either one of these individuals. None of them, you know, Wyatt shouldn't have lost, and Ryback shouldn't have lost. It's like neither one of them could really afford a loss, and Ryback got the short end of the stick. And so Bray Wyatt sits back and does whatever they're doing. I mean, Bray Wyatt's notorious for having the biggest build that you've almost ever seen. And it's absolutely would be a flop. The same thing with Ryback. He's got the biggest build behind him. It's, oh my gosh, Godzilla's coming. And it's Ryback. Neither one of them could really... They promise the world and they deliver Kentucky. It's nothing really... Nothing against Kentucky, but I'm just saying, compare her to a little small piece of land. However, neither one of them could afford a loss. Ryback happened to lose, so he's almost, again, Ryback just almost a fart in the wind. I mean, that's what they're aiming for him to be. Same thing with Bray Wyatt. I mean, they're not compelling characters anymore, and I don't see much going on with them. Okay, Ryback's in Elimination Chamber. Whoop-de-doo. Does nothing for me. Ryback's name on the billboard doesn't make me want to go buy a ticket. Same thing with Bray Wyatt.
And the sad thing about that is that they can, I mean, they really got something going. This is the most steam that we've seen from Ryback. I mean, Ryback is getting legitimate, you know, support. And it's so sad and it's so ridiculous, you know, that they are deciding, you know, to still kind of halt, you know, his push. It's ridiculous, and great point here. Ryback, you know, Wyatt and Ryback equals creative had nothing for them filler feud. Another comment says, I like Ryback more than Wyatt. Wyatt's promos are boring, and he isn't good in that ring. I think Bray Wyatt has a unique style, you know, that could work with certain people. You know, we've seen throughout all of his opportunities to actually become a main eventer, I was sharing this with a buddy of mine this weekend. Just think about all the people that Bray Wyatt has feuded with. He started with Kane, who's a future shoe-in, future Hall of Famer. That really didn't go too much. And then he started feuding with Daniel Bryan not too far after that, kind of Daniel Bryan, CM Punk type of thing. You know, he got injured for a while, and so the Rowan and Harper feuded against CM Punk and Daniel Bryan. And so, you know, he comes back, he feuds with Daniel Bryan, which is actually a pretty good feud. And then he feuds with, and Daniel Bryan's, you know, most likely a Hall of Famer and, you know, multi-time world champ. Feuds with Cena, who's the poster boy of the WWE. That feud was 5 months, still didn't do anything for him. Then he feuds with Chris Jericho, shoe-in Hall of Famer. They had a 3-month feud. That didn't do anything. And so he just keeps going on and on and all these opportunities. Then he feuds with Dean Ambrose for 3 months. That didn't do anything. So he has all these opportunities to actually make it to the main event status. And I mean, the thing is, I don't care. People might disagree with me, and I don't care. But the problem is that Bray Wyatt has had so many opportunities to become a top guy, and he's not capitalized on them. And that's really, really sad about that, you know, has happened. And so, you know, to be honest with you, I can take or leave Wyatt. I still think that he can be a good part of the WWE. I just think that, you know, they need to it's not a matter of feuding with the right people, because he's feuded with, you know, multi-time world champions just about every feud that he had. But at this point, I would like a Randy Orton versus Bray Wyatt feud for the Intercontinental Championship leading to SummerSlam. I think that that would be absolutely awesome for both of them. That wouldn't be a filler feud, and that would elevate the championship. There you go. There's your Intercontinental Championship elevation right there. Speaking of elevation, John Cena versus Rusev. Before we get into that, great job, Dr. Death Steve Williams, one of my favorites, man. I was a huge Dr. Death fan, the Oklahoma Stampede. Dr. Death Steve Williams is one of the people who made me want to be a football player, man. I played football, and Dr. Death was one of the people who inspired me to do that and to be a big guy and play football. And just the Oklahoma Stampede and how he would do a power slam. He would pick you up, run over to the ring post, hit you on the ring post, and then come back out and do a power slam. And, yeah, I was a huge Dr. Death fan. Next question, who was under the Mr. Wrestling 3 mask? Who was under the Mr. Wrestling 3 mask? All right, ladies and gentlemen, next, John Cena defeating Rusev. This was this was the most predictable match. I would say Seth Rollins winning was very predictable too. But John Cena versus Rusev to me was the most predictable match of the night. And I think I even said last week that we're going to see somehow Lana costing Rusev the match. That's exactly what happened. I said throw the towel, and I looked at some reports, and throwing the towel was actually thought that it was actually discussed, and it actually was on the books until the very last minute. And then they also was thinking about having Lana like take her jacket off, and they said that they don't want that until she becomes a full-fledged babyface. And so they decided to, you know, do the whole I quit in Bulgarian thing. So, you know, I think it was very predictable. And Rusev losing, you know, 3 consecutive pay-per-views to John Cena, what the heck is that all about?
Hey, it's horrible. It's bad for Rusev. I mean, he lost on a technicality this time because, Lana threw in the towel or whatever, jacket, whatever. She just basically ruined it for Rusev, and so he's got to figure out a new way to make him look like a tough guy again. John Cena got the nod in this deal. What's forward? What's next for Rusev? I mean, is he going to keep continuing? Is he going to come back and say, oh, I never really lost to you, and that's not fair? It's kind of confusing to see. I didn't expect him to win. I don't think anyone did. It's just one of those things. This is what's going to go on tonight. Whatever happens next, we'll figure it out when it happens.
Yeah.
You know, John Cena, he has made the title interesting, but also it's been interesting because he's been feuding with Rusev. But Cena knows what to do. Cena can take a pile of dog crap and make it interesting. I mean, that's where he's at this point now. So he can take a belt like the U.S. title and just make it the highlight of the night, which he's been pretty much doing on Monday Night Raw. It's good for Cena, for Rusev, not so much.
Yeah, indeed. Steve Corino, is the correct answer under the Mr. Wrestling 3 mask? Next question. Who was Cody Rhodes' first WWE Tag Team Championship partner? Who was Cody Rhodes' first WWE Tag Team Championship partner? Next, we have Naomi and Tamina defeating the Bella Twins. I'm amazing. Yeah, I'm still not buying into Naomi's heel turn. I'm just not. I think, and the thing is, I was, talking to I was talking about Naomi to some friends, to some colleagues, and I was asked, why is she, why did they decide to turn her heel? And, it's because of AJ's retirement, this and that. And I would imagine that she probably wanted to turn heel just because she was a face for so long, and she probably felt like there was a ceiling. But it's one of those things that if you are a heel, you're a heel. Like, you're organically a heel, and you play it well. I don't really think that Naomi plays a heel very well. Like, she does that weird laugh, and she tries to elicit too much reaction from the crowd as a heel. If you're a heel, you're like Rusev. Rusev is a heel. Rusev is a great heel. You know, he'll throw some Bulgarian or some Russian to you, and you won't understand a word that he's saying, but you automatically think that it's bad, because he does a fantastic job as a heel. And, someone like Naomi, to me, I can really take or leave it. Tamina always has this bodyguard, role to her, and, that's a ceiling in her career, that she is known for being a diva bodyguard. And so, and then they just abruptly turned the Bella Twins babyface when they were, like, really, really slimy, nasty heels, and they have no explanation for turning them babyfaces all of a sudden, just because Naomi, to make Naomi a heel for turning on a heel, and so both Brie and Nikki are baby faces now, it makes absolutely no sense. And so just all of this confusion going on with the Divas division, people already are not invested in the Divas division. Now, NXT is an entirely different story. NXT is phenomenal. But from a WWE main roster standpoint, it's already confusing. Natalia's a face for a while and then becomes a heel when Kid and Cesaro's a heel. And then Kid and Cesaro is kind of babyface now, so now Natalia's babyface. And then you got Naomi, who was a face, turned heel. And now the Bellas are faces. And now you had Paige that come back on Raw, who attacked the heels and the face. I mean, it's just way too confusing. How am I supposed to be invested in the Divas division that I don't know if someone's going to be and great point here. Naomi looks lost as a heel. She's awkward. Fantastic point. Enough said right there. Absolutely.
Enough said. I mean, enough with the Divas. I mean, we spend too much time talking about Divas. 90 minutes is never enough. And then you just revealed that you were talking to a colleague about the Divas on your own personal time. Are you out of your mind? Are you crazy?
I'm a pro wrestling journalist. I write for 3 major pro wrestling sites, and so I really don't have a choice but to spend time talking about Divas hesitantly, okay? Hesitantly.
Yeah, I get it. That's cool. And the thing is with the Divas, it's every week is a whole brand-new story. Anytime they step in the ring, it's a brand new story. Forget about what happened last week. It doesn't matter.
Right.
The belt, are face now. Are you kidding me? They hated each other not too long ago. Brie was Nikki's slave, and now they're back to being twin sisters. We love each other, hug and kiss, and all that
right. Weird
stuff. Forget it. I mean, it's again, every week is brand new. The WWE with the Divas cater to their E show, the reality show. When it comes to Monday Night Raw, they give them 5 minutes to make it a horrible spot, and then they go back with whatever stuff they have. That's it. That's
exactly.
The Divas Division in a nutshell.
In a nutshell, exactly. Next question. What year did Brock Lesnar win the King of the Ring? What year did Brock Lesnar win the King of the Ring? Neville and King Barrett, interesting finish here. It really showed that they're not totally giving up on Neville. You know, he won by count out, so he technically won the match. And, you know, Barrett attacked him afterwards, but he ended up besting, you know, Barrett at the very end. So it seems like they haven't totally given up on Neville. Wondering why he wasn't in the Intercontinental title Elimination Chamber. That was a very interesting, you know, decision not to put him in. To be honest with you, I would rather have Neville in there than Dolph Ziggler. That would be my preference. Ziggler is a spot filler. I would rather seen, you know, Dolph Ziggler, you know, start up a feud with somebody else to have a feud with, you know. It seems like we're getting Rusev and Ziggler. That may be okay. that may, you know, just because of Lana, but. I would have rather seen Dolph Ziggler have some type of random, you know, match, you know, against someone who's not in the in the chamber match. I mean, there's heels just kind of roaming around, you know. Bray Wyatt would have been a good person if, you know, if they're trying to put Bray Wyatt over and have him, you know, get some steam, you know. Bray Wyatt and Dolph Ziggler at Elimination Chamber, you know, and just a regular match would have worked. They could have used SmackDown and this Raw and next Raw and next SmackDown to do something, you know, with that to make that type of match. But you know, hey, I would have rather seen Neville. I think Neville would have been a good person in there. But honestly, man, it hurts me to say this because Neville, you know, I followed Neville when he was Pac in the Indies, an awesome, awesome, awesome wrestler, and he's, you know, man, the guy's in fantastic shape too. And I remember when he was Pac, he was I watched some matches with him and AJ Styles, and he was a small fella. During the early days when he was Pac, and then yeah, I mean, he's made. Man, he's made such a physical evolution for sure. So I think, you know, the size isn't necessarily the issue. I still, you know, he doesn't have charisma. Your athletic ability can only take you so much. You know, you're going to need some charisma to be the man. And I don't see much charisma with Pac or with Neville. Even in NXT, you know, he was an awesome NXT champion. We kind of saw it a little bit when he was feuding with Sami Zayn. They were friends, but he kind of was teasing a heel turn for a few weeks down in NXT, which could have, you know, possibly could have worked, could have put some layers on his character. But you know, yeah, we love to see Neville wrestle. And that's really all we're going to get. So I don't see much coming from other than that.
And that's a shame. I mean, Neville makes it very exciting. I like the match between him and Barrett when Barrett just kind of walked away and had to count out. You don't see that hardly ever, that there's been a 10-second count out. So feels different. The match itself, I mean, Neville, I enjoy him. I like Neville. He was great in NXT. I can see him in the main roster. I kind of get what you're saying, where he just doesn't really have charisma. He's just wrestling now. it seems like that's what a lot of people do. It's just they just go out there and wrestle. They have their 10 minutes, and then they're done, and then let's make way for the John Cena's and the Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns. So, I mean, it's like he's almost caught in the mix that just about everybody's in if you're not in a headlining act.
Yeah, absolutely. And then we got Seth Rollins defeating Orton, Reigns, and Ambrose, uses pedigree, which was a horrible-looking pedigree. Oh, goodness, that was absolutely horrible. Interesting match, though. I mean, you know, I will agree with you as far as just the caliber of the match. It was really fun and exciting. I'll give you that. But, you know, I would imagine that Ambrose would have ate the pin, but we saw that the reason why he didn't is because at Elimination Chamber, he's going for the world title, which I'm sure that you're happy about. But, yeah, I mean, the partial, you know, one night only Shield reunion, it was a good spot to see. The triple power bombs and all that, and just the Shield, you know, fist salute and them kind of teasing it and looking at Seth Rollins as, you know, if, you know, they're just saying, hey, you know, you're the one that broke us up, you know, we're not going to reform, you know, right now because, you know, you have other plans. And just, you know, it was cool. Yeah, I liked it. Just the, you know, the double power bomb, not the triple power bomb on Kane to the first time didn't break the table and the second time did. And then just the kind of, just kind of smirkiness that Roman Reigns and Ambrose had before they got back in the ring and start fighting each other. I think it was a good match. A lot of spots, just a lot of random spots. But at the end of the day, I think that it was inevitable that Seth Rollins is winning. I'm just wondering how they're going to be able to whet our appetites for the next 3 months, because at the end of the day, we're most likely going to see Rollins Lesnar at SummerSlam. That's not until, you know, 3 months from now. So you're just going to, from what it seems like, they're just going to throw random matches together for Seth Rollins to main event. I mean, we're seeing Ambrose at Elimination Chamber. You know, wouldn't surprise me if we saw, you know, Orton kind of, you know, another Orton type thing, or maybe some type of screwy finish for Rollins and Ambrose that leads to another match at Money in the Bank, which I'll be at. I'm excited about that. So it just seems like, and then after that, you know, you have Battleground. So you have, you know, three more pay-per-views. Elimination Chamber, Money in the Bank, and Battleground before Lesnar and Rollins. So how in the world are you going to fill those up and keep our interest?
Well, just to set on the main event of Sunday, I was going to say last night. It's the thing about it is everybody in that match had their spot. It was, I don't like to say the word choreographed, but, I mean, you couldn't have asked for better of the participants that were in it. I mean, it was just everybody had their few moments in the sun. I mean, it was put together so well. Loved it. I knew Rollins was going to win. What are they going to do the next 3 months? I mean, that's all inevitable, and nobody knows. Everyone shrugs their shoulders. What are you going to do? You've got until August, until SummerSlam comes along. And
yeah,
you've got Paul Heyman will probably come out maybe mid-July to start teasing it. And you're not going to see any of that for a while. So you've got these, you know, Orton, Dean Ambrose is going to probably stay in the mix for a while. And, of course, Seth Rollins is always going to, or not Rollins, I'm sorry, Roman Reigns is always going to be there at the forefront. So you got to make something work. You just got to juggle these people for the next couple pay-per-views.
Right.
With the WWE Network, they're going to have semi-pay-per-views, like Elimination Chamber. It's getting too much.
Yes.
But going forward, I don't know what they're going to do with the championship. They're going to keep on Rollins, obviously, but you got to keep him fresh. You got to keep all this fresh, and that's going to be hard to do. You don't want to have the same main event at every pay-per-view for the next 2 months.
Absolutely. I mean, good comment here. You know, 2002 was the correct answer. Good comment here talking about Rusev Ziggler would be good. I mean, we saw a lot of Rusev Ziggler matches, just ran regular matches, you know, on Raw and SmackDown before. You know, they have good matches. You know, I would just prefer, honestly, I would have been more intrigued if Lana would have done that to Neville. Because Neville is, you know, he's a fresh talent. You know, he's very over with the fans. I mean, Ziggler is too, but Neville is very over with the crowds as far as an athleticism standpoint, and it adds a layer to his character. It adds a layer to Neville's character. It shows some personality that we need to see with Neville. And Rusev versus Neville, to me, if Neville and Rusev were both in the chamber, they kind of went at it, and we saw some Lana stuff going on with Neville and Lana before the chamber. I think that that would really be awesome. And if we saw Rusev, Neville, you know, at a pay-per-view, you know, probably they'd both be in Money in the Bank, but something like a Battleground. If they fought against each other at Battleground in July, I think that that would have been an awesome way to really bring Neville some personality and add some layers to his character, you know, other than, you know, just coming out and wrestling. You know, he tried to cut a promo on Raw, but, yeah, it wasn't the best for sure. All right, ladies and gentlemen, question on deck right now is, who did Bill Goldberg defeat to become WCW U.S. champion? Who did Bill Goldberg defeat to become WCW world champion? Raw review coming up.
You are now listening to the Pancakes and Power Slam show by Crave Wrestling on Blog Talk Radio. Be sure to follow Crave Wrestling on Twitter at Crave Wrestling and join the Facebook fan page Crave Wrestling.
WWE Raw, Richmond, Virginia. And we started with the Authority in-ring promo interrupted by Sheamus and then Ryback. This leads to Stephanie putting both of them in a chamber, and Triple H books a match against each other. We talked about Sheamus and Ryback. I see money in this feud. I think this feud is an awesome idea. I like it. I remember when they were kind of battling it out at the Royal Rumble a couple years back. And they both were baby faces, but I was like, man, I see money in this feud between Ryback and Sheamus. And just to have, you know, them fight on Raw and have Ryback lose for two straight weeks was definitely not a good idea to me.
Not a good idea. And they would be a perfectly matched entity for each other. And I mean, I would excellently draw money, especially for the mid-card. We gripe about the mid-card so much. But again, it seems like you know, what can each of them gain from, okay, Sheamus beat Ryback, Ryback beat Sheamus. What's next? That's a big question mark.
Yeah.
So, yeah, honestly, that's it.
Yeah, I agree. That's really it. Renee Young and Raven is the correct answer. Good job. Loads of trivia today. I'll get a lot of get a lot of feedback throughout the week of how people love trivia. I love trivia too, so that's a perfect match between Pancakes and Power Slams and the We Are Wrestling live stream. I this is the reason why I love interacting with We Are Wrestling live stream. And also, you know, Blog Talk Radio, we get our chat room loads up as well on Blog Talk Radio. And then, of course, tweeting at Crave Wrestling too. But tell you what, man, just the live stream interaction with We Are Wrestling is awesome stuff. And I appreciate you all. Great job. Raven is the correct answer. Next is, who has the most TNA X Division title reigns? Who has the most TNA X Division title reigns? Renee Young interviews Neville. We talked about that. Then we have some Bo Dallas. Now, what it seems like they're doing is it seems like they're trying to give Neville some type of initial push. It's not necessarily initial push, but like I said, they don't want to totally tarnish his name. But it seems like we're done with Barrett and Neville. And, you know, Neville went against Barrett. Barrett won. And then looks like we're transitioning into, you know, the NXT feud of last year or a couple years back. Bo Dallas and Neville. Bo Dallas has not been any person relevant in quite some time. But I suppose that, you know, it makes Neville gets a win. Neville wins a feud, so I guess it still doesn't make him look weak. But I'm really not interested in Bo Dallas versus Neville, and it seems like this is totally to not just bury Neville already.
It's not going to bury Neville as much as it just will Bo Dallas and keep him irrelevant. You don't want to give that to Neville. I mean, he's got heat behind him as far as just push this guy to the top. Maybe not so much the top, but doggone it. I'm tired of seeing these people that they just push and make awesome promos. Get behind him, Neville, the guy that defies gravity or gravity for God. Sir Isaac Newton has nothing to do with Neville, but let's keep it to the point where it's Neville. He's exciting. You want to see him. You want to see him perform. You want to see him overcome. And they bury these people. And, I mean, you've seen that. Again, we can bring up Bray Wyatt and Ryback and probably 400 other great examples of someone that they just absolutely bury. But the point with Bo Dallas, it's an NXT almost what can they do on the big stage? But the big stage doesn't know what to do with these two.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And got a comment here. Never thought about adding a layer to Neville's character. That's a good point. The only problem I see is Lana towering over Neville. That's the thing. I think that the very fact that Neville is a smaller guy, I think that him just kind of being, you know, starstruck by Lana, I think it fits both of them. I think, you know, Lana just kind of, you know, showing a crush on Neville. That would just bring so much pops to Neville because people are already liking him, but he didn't have a character. I think Lana would actually put him over even more. And then Lana, you know, choosing Neville, smaller guy, but still has some type of, you know, likeness to him, some type of attraction that'll help, you know, Neville, you know, gain some confidence. I think Lana and Neville as a tandem would definitely be awesome. All right, we got, as far as the X Division Championship, we got two answers. We got Sabin and Daniels. The correct answer is Chris Sabin. So congratulations, Chris Sabin is the correct answer. Rusev entering promo. We talked about Lana and Rusev. Wyatt defeating Dean Ambrose. You know, Wyatt just getting some steam because of Ambrose getting shoved by Jamie Noble. And, of course, that was just going to lead. You know, there's promos throughout the night of Ambrose and Rollins, and we're going to see that. Kidd and Cesaro defeating New Day by disqualification, and then Xavier Woods come out. New Day attacks Cesaro. That leads into the tag team elimination chamber, which all the participants came out. Lucha Dragons, Los Matadores, Ascension, Primetime Players. And then Primetime Players gets the, you know, the last, I guess, the last moment and celebrates and does their taunt. I'm happy that there's six teams. I'm happy that there's a team in each pod instead of just having, you know, three teams and six pods. That wouldn't have made a difference. That wouldn't have made sense at all. But now, since it is actually six teams and a team in a pod, I think that it could be intriguing. So if it was just three teams, I was totally against it. But now, since it is actually six teams, I'm buying into it a little bit more just because we've never seen one, you know, in the 13 years that the Elimination Chamber has been around. Well, 12 and a half years that the Elimination Chamber has been around, you know, we've never seen a tag team one. So it's intriguing in that sense. So I'll give it to them. And I'm excited to see exactly how it's going to pan out.
It'll be different. It'll be okay. Elimination Chamber for me personally was never that big of a thing. It was more of like a gimmick. Whatever they want to do with it. But the tag teams, yeah, I'm intrigued. I'm going to watch the pay-per-view on WWE Network. Ladies and gentlemen, I think it's going to be okay. However, I think that the tag team division inside that, it's very, very intriguing on my part. And I'm just curious to see how he's going to come out on top. I mean, New Day obviously has the hype behind him. You got Cesaro and Tyson Kidd. Keep that in mind and just, I'm kind of looking forward to it, Chris. I mean, obviously, I'm really thinking this could be a new wave as far as the tag team division goes. So I'm really psyched for this, actually.
I agree. All right, so we can have enough time for Flav of the Week. We're just going to dab into it, it seems like. We'll just talk about Cena and Owens. I think that that was a fantastic segment because it gives, for some reason, it seems like the NXT is not translated over to the casuals yet. I mean, we see NXT people getting over, you know, when Neville debuting the Raw after, you know, WrestleMania was a good idea because a lot of those people that you see are diehard fans that come all from all away, you know, all over the world. So that was a good way of debuting Neville. But the NXT champion, you know, Kevin Owens, it seems like, you know, the Virginia crowd was not very familiar with who he was. And so it was a good way to really kind of have an invasion type of feel to it. And I think that, you know, the very fact that he, you know, had an advantage over John Cena his first time on a WWE main roster, I think that's a statement for NXT. It makes people want to watch the NXT live event tonight, Unstoppable. And it makes people want to really invest in the product of NXT. And I think that just having some type of the fact that was quick, it was a surprise, it destroyed the U.S. Open Challenge, it made the NXT title credible because Kevin Owens didn't even want to accept the championship. That was, it was, oh, A+, awesome segment. And, you know, most likely Kevin Cena is not going to win an Elimination Chamber, but the very fact that he made the statement and is going against John Cena on his very first pay-per-view match on the main roster, absolutely awesome, awesome work there.
It's a win-win for WWE because they own NXT. I mean, they go hand-in-hand. I love the invasion part of it where you see the NXT characters come out and do their thing. I like the NXT championship belt better than I do the WWE championship belt. I love the giant X in the middle. And I mean, it's absolutely wonderful. I love the idea of that. It just kind of gives you that underdog, let's rally behind this person and push them. So, I mean, we've had that the past few months now. And so we understand and we get it. But NXT is still it's still just kind of being discovered. But it's going to be something. It's not like TNA, where TNA's TNA. It's NXT. The WWE owns it. They're going to be coming out doing run-ins. It's still not, I wouldn't say competitor yet, but it's getting awful close, and I kind of like the idea of it.
Absolutely. We talked about Dolph Ziggler and Stardust with the Lana part, Roman Harper defeating Zack Ryder and Fandango. That was a waste of time. Nikki Bella defeating Naomi by DQ, and we talked about Paige coming out. And then you had Seth Rollins' Appreciation Night, which really kind of cemented Ambrose as a world title number one contender. Had his head in the center block in the chair. And then, you know, of course, Steph said, you know, if you let him go, I'll give you a title shot. Kane, you know, J&J Security and Kane, you know, they jump Ambrose. So Rollins' pedigree is Ambrose. The pedigree looked a little bit better on Raw, at least. But, yeah. Ambrose versus Rollins is definitely a filler match. You know, people will get into it, but I want some suspense, man. I'm not. There's no part of me at all that believe that Dean Ambrose will get the strap, you know, at Elimination Chamber. That's what we need as a main event for the World Heavyweight Championship. And like we're saying, it just seems like they're just filling people in the slot, you know, just to set up for Lesnar and Rollins, which, not a big fan of. I definitely think that the match will be good, but it's not. It's so predictable to me.
Yeah, it's predictable, and everyone knows it's going to be filler because, again, like we mentioned before, you've got to fill time before SummerSlam. They're going to throw characters in there. You know, this week, you know, Dean Ambrose, in hindsight, he's an awesome contender for the title, but he's just not going to get it. They're not going to give it to him. Seth Rollins just has to kind of keep fending off foes until he, you know, does his major thing, SummerSlam. Somehow it'll probably end up on Roman Reigns, you know, Brock Lesnar will be in the mix. If they do another three-way, that's fine. But, again, at the end of the day, I want to build up to be absolutely perfect between two people. And they just duke it out and do the best they can. But, you know, filler, that's they're going to get over the summer. That's wrestling, ladies and gentlemen. You're going to get the best, the cream of the crop when they're ready for it. And you're going to have so much filler in between them. Enjoy the filler because it can make or break people. Dean Ambrose, yeah. I don't think it's going to hurt him too much, but, I mean, he's earning a paycheck and he's making everybody happy. I love to see him. Everybody wants to see him. He's a believable character, but, again, he's not, they're not going to put the strap on him.
Yeah. I don't see it. I just don't see the WWE putting, if anything, maybe just a filler down the line, possibly. But, yeah, I don't see anything coming from this as far as, you know, making Dean Ambrose, you know, some type of star or something like that as far as a main event guy. If anything, I see him having this moment and, you know, going back into the mid-card scene coming up. Ladies and gentlemen, flavor of the week. Let's get into it real quick. We have 2002. We're just going to name all of the 2002 to 2008 winners and then just some takeaways on how we feel about which one was our favorite winner and which one was not our favorite winner. So flavor of the week coming up.
It is now time for the flavor of the week.
2002 was the very first Elimination Chamber match, and the winner there was Shawn Michaels. I remember he left his gear somewhere, I guess at home or on a flight or something like that, and he had some type of weird brown, like just hurried up brown pants on with like some cowboy boots and end up winning. It was a really good chamber match. The second one was SummerSlam of 2003, Triple H won. The participants in the first one was Michaels, Booker T, Triple H, Jericho, Rob Van Dam, and Kane. Triple H won the second one, defeating Jericho, Goldberg, Nash, Orton, and Michaels. 2005, New Year's Revolution, that kind of became the hub for Elimination Chamber matches for a couple of years. Triple H won again, 2005, and then Cena won in 2006. That's the one that Edge cashed the chamber in. And then probably the most embarrassing one was the one for ECW. Bobby Lashley won defeating Show, Holly, Punk, Test, and RVD. Decent names there, but just that pay-per-view was just so awful. And then finally, for this go-around, 2008, The Undertaker won at No Way Out, defeating Big Daddy V, Batista, Kali, Finley, and MVP. That's probably one of the weakest rostered ones. So what's your, from 2002 to 2008, what's your most memorable Elimination Chamber match?
I seem to remember the one with when John Cena defeated Kurt Angle. I think that was 06, I believe, 2006. Carly, and I remember Chris Masters, Shawn Michaels, and Kane. Again, Elimination Chamber was never that big of a thing. It kind of reminds me back when the day when they had the scaffold matches. And it was, scaffolding was interesting. And you got the Elimination Chamber, which is kind of interesting. It never really sparked that big of a thing to me. Like, you win the Elimination Chamber. I mean, they've had so many of them. Seems like Triple H usually gets the good part of it. But with the John Cena defeated Kurt Angle and Carlito, Chris Masters, I mean, that really kind of solidified Cena for that much. Not that I'm a Cena guy, but yes, for one of my memories. And for whatever reason, I remember that one. But probably because Kurt Angle put up a heck of a fight in that one. And I'm a lobbyist to bring Kurt Angle back in the WWE.
Yeah, I would totally be a big fan of Kurt Angle versus Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania 32, the last match between both of them. Absolutely. My most memorable one was the Shawn Michaels one. I think it was a great chamber match. The participants were awesome. And I think that it was just a back-and-forth match. Triple H was just a solid, solid heel at that time. And I remember he was feuding against Shawn Michaels. They had their match at SummerSlam that year when Michaels came back from his, you know, back injury. He was out for 4 years, and he came back and surprised. It was a surprise. I mean, he looked weird too because he cut his hair a lot. Just the gear was just a little bit awkward. But yeah, I was, you know, Michaels fan, and I was really, really happy that they had that. It was just an awesome match. And then my second most memorable one was the 06 one, the New Year's Revolution. Just the New Year's Revolution pay-per-view alone didn't last long, but they still decided to have the Elimination Chamber kind of be the feature of that pay-per-view. I always wonder why they decided to do the New Year's Revolution pay-per-view anyways. It was like Puerto Rico the first year. But yeah, I mean, the reason why it was memorable to me is when, you know, Edge cashed in the first Money in the Bank case. And so, you know, that was really, really awesome to see that. He had the case from WrestleMania till then. So it was like 9 months. And so it was very, very memorable. So it was really awesome. Ladies and gentlemen, yeah, and I agree real quick. Undertaker winning the Elimination Chamber was really cool, too. Like I said, the lineup was not very strong, comparatively speaking, but it was good as well. We have some good stuff going on next week. Stay tuned to the Crave Wrestling Facebook page as far as what was going on next week. We got some really, really good stuff. And then it's also the go-home show to Elimination Chamber. Always, always, always a fun, fun time at Pancakes and Power Slams on this show. Subscribe to us on YouTube, on iTunes. We're getting into YouTube soon, and we're also going to get the page started as well with all the different episodes on there. So thank you so much. I love interacting with you all. Awesome, awesome time as always. Be sure to stay tuned and tune us next week for episode 165. Until next week, have a great week. Enjoy your week of wrestling. Daddy loves Elijah and Ian, and God bless. Goodbye.